Good to have you along. So there's an interesting phenomenon going on here in the area of cannabis retailers in Ontario. Like anything that is new, it starts off with just a few shops here and there, and we've wondered how many will there be? How is the dynamic of that business going to change as time goes on? Well, let's talk about this. There's an article in the Globe and Mail about it, and also Brad Poulos is a lecturer with Ryerson University and a cannabis business expert. We probably don't have a lot of those yet in this country. Brad Poulos, welcome.
Morning, Jerry.
Do you have this area to yourself at the moment from the educational perspective?
There's a couple of others that are studying the industry in Ontario, but yeah, it's still pretty much uncharted territory.
All right. Well, this story in the Globe and Mail starts off with the owner of an independent cannabis retail shop called Flower Pot. And then when getting ready to open in the spring of 2020, along comes a competitor just two doors away. And it's one of the larger operations, Superette. Is there no sort of territory granted, so to speak, like you would with like if you bought a McDonald's or something by the government to the people they're licensing?
No, there's nothing like that built into the rules. The only rules around where you can go are actually set primarily by the municipalities. And one of the factors they don't take into account is whether or not your business is going to be viable. It's not really the government's job to make sure that, you know, your business is going to be a success. It's up to you to do the work researching, you know, what the size of the market and how many stores it might be able to handle and how many stores are likely to locate.
Sure, but maybe a person could make the argument, since this is controlled by the government in a different way maybe than, say, opening a restaurant would be, and a restaurant next door might not be an issue because it's a different type of restaurant, that sort of thing. But these are places selling a cannabis product. So, yes, you have to do the research, but when you buy, you get the license and you open a shop, there isn't anybody else on your street. You don't know whether the government's going to allow somebody to open next door. There's no way to know that.
That's a fair point. I feel for the lady mentioned in the article. It's one of the reasons why if you're going to win this business, you really have to do it. You have to well capitalized. You've got to be able to get over this period that I think is coming over the next year or two, where there's going to be a massive market shakeout. And anybody who's thinking about opening a single store, given the current environment, I think is heading for a disaster financially. I don't think I would recommend it at all. It's going to be a world like so many other businesses in the end, dominated by a handful of larger players.
In early 2020, according to the Globe and Mail, there were 67 stores across the province. Today, there are 817, and they're not done, are they?
No. In fact, to get ready to talk to you this morning, I just double-checked how many were in the queue, and there's 673 in the queue. And, you know, interestingly, that's coming really close to a number of around 1,500 authorized stores in Ontario. And just to kind of put that in perspective, let's take a look at alcohol. So, first off, around three times as many people consume alcohol as do cannabis. So just in terms of trying to gather, you know, how much demand is there for this product. And it's like I say, about one-third as many people smoke or consume cannabis as consume alcohol. There are around 1,500 locations in Ontario where you can buy beer. If we take beer store, grocery store, liquor stores.
Okay.
So there's no question about it. We are going to be significantly overbuilt in terms of cannabis, retail stores. And it's really not a surprise. If you look at other industries over our lifetime, we can take .com. You and I have talked about that one before. But even more recently, the cultivation side of cannabis also got significantly overbuilt because of all of this hype. So it was quite predictable to see this, quite predictable that this would happen in the retail side. And it's starting to unfold.
Well, revenue is going up. You have more stores, and maybe increasingly it's become more acceptable to purchase the product for people who in the past either secretively used the product or, let's face it, Brad, a lot of people didn't smoke marijuana because it was against the law. Some people just follow the law. But now it has become a much different situation. So I'm sure it's still a growing market.
The market has actually not grown that much since legalization came around. There's a small uptick, especially on the edible side, in terms of consumption. But the experience in the United States, early experience here in Canada, says that there's not a massive uptick in usage because of legalization. Certainly not enough to justify this number of stores anyway. Perhaps one or two at the margin, but that would be it.
All right. So what we're talking about here with Brad Poulos, lecturer at Ryerson University and cannabis business expert, is an article in the Globe and Mail that says the growth of cannabis retailers in Ontario could lead to a wave of closures. It would be reasonable to assume that the people who were so well capitalized, they own a whole bunch of these stores, 60 or 70 stores, are the ones who are going to survive. And some of those independent stores are going to be in real trouble unless for some reason they get left alone in their location. Now, this isn't strictly a business aspect, so maybe I'm asking you a question out of left field, but still you pay so much attention to this that maybe you'll have a thought on it. I saw a story, Brad Poulos, just the other day that the number of people arrested for driving while impaired involving cannabis products has gone up, I think it was 43% or something.
Yes. Now that is, so I certainly agree with the stat, but you've got to have a look at, sort of take a very high level view of this. As I said, there's not a lot of new consumption that gets created. And prior to legalization, we were not keeping as much, the police were just not in a position to enforce driving while high like they are today. There weren't as many people trained to recognize it. There is no breathalyzer, so you were really, really counting on a police officer either smelling it or just being able to tell that the person was high. Now we've got a lot more officers in a position to detect it, and so we are indeed detecting it. But people have been driving high since driving, really, and it's certainly it's not a good thing, and it I'm glad that we're capturing more of it.
All right. Now, one of the reasons articulated by the Prime Minister when he first said he was for legalization of marijuana, which we ultimately achieved, was to take it out of the hands of the criminals. I'm not convinced that's happened.
It's happened at the margin, of course, because we have diverted some cannabis use to the legal market, which is great, somewhere between 25 and 30%. But the rest of that is still in the illicit market. And a lot of that is organized crime. So I'm sure we've made a dent in it. But it's going to be a long time till that's fully, obliterated.
Well, I think it'll never be fully obliterated, and here's why, Brad, and maybe I'm being cynical, but I have an example, and that's cigarettes, and that is government is addicted to finding new ways to place taxes somewhere, and they certainly will do it on sin taxes, as they call it, and they've done it with alcohol and cigarettes, so why wouldn't they do it with marijuana? And the more they jack up the price of legal marijuana, the more opportunity there is for the illegal market to profit.
I think you're absolutely right. It's one of the things I've been warning against since we started talking about legalization, is go low and slow on taxes. They did that with alcohol to go back almost 100 years in the end of Prohibition. The government was careful not to overtax it at the beginning. And so what you want to do instead is change people's behaviors, move them over into the legal market, and then slowly inch those taxes up. But if they try that while there's still a thriving illicit market, that's just going to push people right back to it.
Sure, but the reason that they can get away with adding some tax to a fine alcohol product is, Brad, you can't cook that up in your basement and sell it to me, but it's not hard for people to get into the illegal marijuana market.
You're absolutely right. I meant to mention that, actually. So there was a stronger incentive for people to stay in the legal market with alcohol because of, as you mentioned, the difficulty in producing it, but also the safety issue. There were a lot of people that died and went blind consuming illegal alcohol, back during Prohibition almost 100 years ago, and that's not really anywhere near as much of a concern, I'll say, with cannabis.
Yeah. Well, obviously still an emerging market, and we'll keep checking in with you. Brad Poulos, thanks very much for doing this.
Great talking to you. Thanks,
yeah. Jerry. Now, I know we've all been interested in this, even if you don't have plans to cross the border into the United States. The reopening of that border certainly would signify that we're moving more and more forward toward getting back to reality, so to speak, out of the pandemic. And at 1:30, the federal government is going to reveal plans regarding the border. We don't know what those plans are, but make an appointment with your smart speaker to hear it on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.